can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
For a whole lot of reasons, we have an extraordinarily interesting guest. Are you listening to this?
I'm reading a book. I'm flicking.
Well, I thought I might just tell you whose book you're reading for a start, and then we'll go from there, eh? This is Nicola Charles we're going to speak to. She is AKA. Do you know what that means?
No, Acker.
Sarah.
Acker. He played on the wing for Brisbane.
Don, please.
Jason Ackerman.
Don, we're with a company. I don't mind if you pretend you're a fool, but don't do it in front of Nicola, please. Also known as Sarah Beaumont from the longest running soap in the history of television in Australia, Neighbours.
Woohoo! Hi, Neighbours.
And
Nicola, I never watched an episode, I'm sorry.
No, Me either, I just made it.
We're of a different generation. You probably watched Kylie and Jason when they started on it, didn't you?
No, I told
Doesn't
you,
matter.
Don't you listen to me. I said I've never watched an episode.
It
clashed with the ABC News.
Nicola is an author, an actress. She has a publishing company. And we might speak to her about her political persuasion and what
sure
she finds fascinating about overseas politics, but that's not the real reason we got her in. She is an interesting person in her own right, and welcome, Nicola.
Hi, guys. Thank you. How are you doing? Good. Nice intro.
the first question I want to ask you is, this is because we get all our information from the Wikipedia machine.
Okay.
Most of it's inaccurate. If you look at mine, most of it's inaccurate. But it says here, which fascinated me, and there's a reason I'm asking you this. In 1998 and 1999, you were voted by FHM magazine?
Yeah.
The second most sexiest woman in the world.
Yes.
What I want to know is who was the first?
It was Jenny McCarthy because she was on MTV at the time. But I dispute it because
McCarthy.
She had falsies and mine are real. So I just feel that was a little unfair.
We'll take your word for it.
But what was most impressive is Jennifer Aniston was third, and I was a real fan of Friends. So that was kind of flattering.
You were
at the time.
Second most sexiest. People would say that's politically incorrect these days to say you're
probably.
Pigeonholing you as a sexy woman.
I like it.
I said on Twitter, I said you're smart, articulate.
No, you said good looking. It was a bit offensive because I'd prefer beautiful, stunning, drop dead. You know?
I hadn't met you. I only saw a picture of you, but now I've seen you, I'll amend that immediately.
So where was this done as a star of Neighbours?
Yeah, when I was on Neighbours. The thing about that was this was pre-internet and pre-social media. So you're talking about guys that actually had to put a stamp on an envelope and walk to the postbox. So that's quite impressive.
Why creepy?
Or creepy. Look, listen.
Well...
So you're a multinational personality. I can tell that you have an English accent somewhere in the back of that Australian accent.
I'm losing it, apparently, my British fans say.
No, but I like it. It's good.
Thank you.
And so was there some reference to Germany? Did you...
My mum's German.
I read that and then I thought, I wonder if you're German or you... So you're an English-born
half-German
Australian.
Yeah, I'm an adopted Australian is what they say. I've had my permanent residency for like 25 years, but I guess that could change at any moment.
And before we get on to Neighbours and all the standard questions, the Dorothy Dixes and Donald Trump and all that, you got your break by being the Sprite girl.
That's right.
For Coca-Cola, who made Sprite. Lemonade. You were the flagship woman.
And I didn't, and you know what, this is so bizarre, that the really major points on the graph of my life and career, I was never trying to get. So with the Sprite commercial, I was with a friend who's a dancer, waiting with her outside Pineapple Studio in Covent Garden.
Oh, sorry.
And a man walked down the cobbled street and was staring at me a bit creepily. And I thought, oh God, here we are in a big city and there's a bloke leering at me. And he came over with his Scottish accent and said, "Hello, I'm the chief executive of Coca-Cola UK. Would you come to this audition tomorrow?" And I said, "Well, no, I'm only here for the day." And he said, "I suggest you go." And I went the next day and I became the face of Sprite.
Yeah. That is incredible. Extraordinary in itself. Today, did you think, hello, this bloke's winding me up, this man is...
Well, I wasn't too scared because all the dancers were queuing up. Oh, everyone was there. I wasn't alone. But yeah, he gave me a card and he said, be here at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. I drank from the can. I smiled into the camera. I could see the lens zooming in and out and got the job. And it was me and a guy and we became known as the Sprite Kids in the UK. Yeah.
Oh, that's extraordinary.
So were you an actress at that stage? Or?
No, I was working in a bank.
That's amazing. So was it a photographic? Were you photographed as the Sprite Girl, or was the TV
commercial?
TV commercial.
Shot
as
in
well.
At Lake Garda in Italy. It was absolutely stunning in a convertible Volkswagen Karmann Gear.
And did he tell you what he would pay you, or did you say, "Well, you can get me, but this is what it'll cost"?
When my agent said it to me, this was a big shoot. It was a big shoot, and it was would require 6 weeks in Italy. And they said, "Well, I'd have to give up my banking job." And so I said, "Well, you know, I'm not sure I can give up my banking job." And they said, "It's £100,000 buyout for the campaign."
What year is that?
That was about 1992, 1993.
Wow, 100,000 quid. Yeah. What's that, about 250 of ours?
250,000.
I think it was about 4 or 5 years of my annual salary at the bank at the time, yeah.
And you were contracted for a period of time and then they someone else?
2 years. I think it went on longer than that. Yeah, because we got royalties as well, so it was quite a good one.
Fantastic.
So then you came to Australia, the ad ran its course and then you...
Oh no, I did lots of ads. I did about 60 ads in the UK. I did ads for Ford Cars, L'Oreal, Rimmel, Schwarzkopf,
Haagen-Dazs. So you weren't
exclusive
to Sprite?
No, I couldn't do any other fizzy drinks. And when Sprite did end, I actually did go on and do some work with Sunkist as well. But I was exclusive to them. When you do a car commercial, you can't do other car commercials and that kind of thing. So I was all over Europe. I used to live part of the year in Barcelona, part of the year in Miami, part of the year in Paris, then back to London, and they'd move me around. And I actually only came to Australia because I had an Australian boyfriend at the time. He lived with me in London for 2 years, and I honestly thought he'd never leave because he loved London. He was like Mr. Society in London. And then he got offered an acting job in Queensland back in Australia, and he said, hey, you want to go back to Australia for a bit? And I spoke to my agent, and she said, look, you're horribly overexposed. Like, if you know, in Coronation Street, when there was an ad, there's 5 ads, and I was in 4 of them. So she said, you need to leave anyway. You need to go somewhere. And I came back, and I sunbathed for 6 weeks, did nothing. And then I got bored and I was watching TV with my boyfriend's sister. She was watching The Price is Right. And I thought, I know. Uh-huh. I'll go down there and see them and see if I can be a model on The Price is Right. And Jan Ross came down to see me from Neighbours.
Yeah, know the name?
Yeah.
So you weren't a contestant. You went for the
a model.
Hostesses.
Well, I thought, because I was a swimwear model, right? So I thought, it's the easiest job in the world. No offence, Price is Right, girls. I know some of you and you're gorgeous and lovely. But I thought... Instead of me having to go to modelling castings and travel the world and live in these different territories, I could live in Australia with my boyfriend, put a bikini on, stand next to a washing machine and go, you've won a washing machine.
Nicola, imagine today you wearing a bikini standing next to a washing machine.
No one would pay me for that today, Sam.
The station would be taken off air. They'd say you're exploiting women. It is extraordinarily...
The change in 20 years
is going on.
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
The Price is Right and then someone... Saw you, I think. Someone saw you. Jane Russ saw you and said, you better come in and do this at Neighbours.
Well, she took me upstairs. I didn't know she was Jan Russ. I didn't know anything about Neighbours. I hadn't watched it in the UK. Of course, I knew that Kylie and Jason were huge and they were releasing pop songs in the UK at that point. And I honestly thought I was auditioning for The Price is Right, and it is a TV show. So when she took me into the room and there was a blue background and there was a script on a chair and she sat at one end and I sat in the chair and picked up the script. And then I looked down at the paper and the top of the paper said Neighbours. And I thought, oh, well, you know, they always get you to say something. So perhaps, you know, or perhaps it's been a mistake. So I said to her, look, you know, I'm here for The Price is Right. And she said, no, I'm seeing you for Neighbours. And I said, oh, no, see, because I'm a model and I try to hand her my book. and she rejected it.
Your folio, yeah, all your pictures, yep.
She rejected it, and she pointed to her head, and she said, I know about this, but I want to know what's in here, inside my head, and honestly, I shit myself.
And you had no formal training. That was you. They just spotted you as a good-looking person and wanted you to go on to Neighbours and just thought they'd wing it, that you could actually read a part or act.
Well, yeah, I mean, there wasn't... I wouldn't say winging it. So I did go to drama school. I went to drama school as a child, but she didn't know that, obviously. And it was just a fun thing in the UK. And I mostly went with sort of the dancing side, and I was in a dance troupe and we did competitions. There were screen tests for Neighbours. And I write about this in my autobiography, Soap Star, that's coming out in a couple of months. The screen test.
What is it called?
Soap Star.
Oh, well, I see. Yeah, The Witches of Turek.
Yeah, that's fiction.
Click Monkey.
Yeah.
And you have a autobiography, something that you've written,
yes,
coming out.
Yeah.
I see.
And the autobiography is all truth, so I think there's a few people quaking in their boots.
Well, it'll be all truth because you're writing it.
That's right, exactly.
This is digressing, your publishing company, Shield...
Shield Maiden Publishing.
Shield Maiden.
Yeah.
That's your publishing company.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary, Nicola. You're an author, a publisher, a actress.
Well, I'm trying, Sam. I think that's why I fit in Australia, because I'm just a little Aussie battler. I mean, what else can I do?
And you've got some... we'll get on to why you've got a lot of courage, because in this day and age of cancel culture and being intimidated and ostracised, it is fantastic to have someone that, whether you like it or not, Don... has an opinion, is not worried about backing down from it because it might be unpopular. And I know this as well as anyone, and I got a feeling Nicola is just about to jump into the deep end and find out what it's like.
I think so, yeah. Judging by the comments this week online, for sure.
No, but these are the cowards, these are the people. I have this, not my saying, because I'm not smart enough to think up anything myself, but someone said critics are like eunuchs in a harem. They're there every night. They see it done every night. They see how it should be done, but they can't do it themselves. They just sit and carp and just criticise, and they get off on it. They get aroused by thinking they're actually abusing someone who could give a fuck. Could care less about what they who could care less about what they say.
Yeah, I think the thing for me is that I did live in Los Angeles for 7 years, and it was under the Obama administration, and I cheered like crazy when he became president. Obviously, I wasn't allowed to vote because I'm British, and I honestly thought that he would change the landscape of America for the better. And during the time he was in office and I was there, it actually got worse, and we saw him undertake actions that honestly left my jaw on the floor, like giving $1.5 billion to Iran and all those kind of things that went down. And so I started to literally change sides. I went from what I would describe as an old school hippie and sort of going with the flow with the left, to rethinking everything that I know. And Americans really describe me as a libertarian because I'm kind of in the middle. And I am in the middle because I do believe in things like, gay marriage and a woman's right to choose and all that stuff. But I also believe in small government. I don't like big government. I don't like government controlling everything. And what you can see now with the Biden-Harris administration coming in is all this control, particularly with big tech and social media.
It's extraordinary. The clampdown of the big tech against people who don't share their opinion. And I'm a bit the same as you. I have no idea why for 4 years they tried to get rid of Donald Trump before they even knew what he was on about, just because he was about to try and destroy the reputation and their lifestyle. It is beyond me how anyone, even if you are against Donald Trump, civil libertarians will allow what's going on in that country at the minute.
That's right. It's
and
hypocritical.
Don't forget, I'm not lecturing you, 75 million people voted for him, and it is extraordinary that they will tamp them down. Something is going to happen then. People aren't going to tolerate being told what they can say and on what platform. But that's not the reason we got you in here necessarily. So you wrote, you've had COVID?
Yes, in March. Really badly.
So...
And how did you catch that, first off?
I have no idea, because I lead a very small life. I live in the mountains, in the Dandenong Ranges.
How did you know you had it?
Well, I planned my funeral. That's really how
you
I knew I had it.
You became really ill.
Yeah, and we're a family of five, and everyone else was what they would describe as asymptomatic. So that's my partner, who's 48. My three children, who are 15, 13, and 10, they all had a bit of a sniffle, felt a bit rubbish for 2 days, just like a normal flu, and everything was fine. I had 2 weeks of a really severe flu, and then everything changed. I started to panic because I couldn't breathe. And if there's anything, you know, I have renewed sympathy for people with asthma, because I can't imagine what this is like. And in fact, a really good friend of mine who suffers with asthma posted me, because we were in lockdown by then, posted me an inhaler, and I actually believe that saved my life. And I was on the worst 2 or 3 days, I was on all fours, on my hands and knees, gasping for air. And I called everybody for a test, because I was really scared. I called the local police station. I called my local MP, Jason Wood, the MP for La Trobe. I called the COVID hotline in the end. The first time I called the COVID hotline, and I talked about this on radio. I had my radio show, That Radio Show, which ended in March, with SEN. And I actually played on air what I'd got from the COVID hotline, which was an American voice saying, "Please hold on while we try and connect your call." And it said that for 45 minutes and then cut me off twice in one night. So eventually I got through to the COVID hotline, and she said to me, "The next stage for you is a crushing sensation in your chest. You need to say a meaningful goodbye to your children and call 000. Yeah.
So you said you called your Member of Parliament, or
yep,
your local member. Did you call a doctor to start with?
Yes, the doctor said, "Don't come." And the first time I
called, don't come to the surgery.
That's right. And the first time I called, that was when I got through to the doctor. The first time I called, also talked about this on radio, I got through to the receptionist, you know, and we all chat to our receptionist at the doctor's surgery. And in her wisdom, she said to me, even though I was coughing my guts out and couldn't breathe, she said to me, "Oh, it's okay, you don't have COVID-19.
That's extraordinary, isn't it?
And I thought, how the hell do you know?
And if you see it is extraordinary. We've just been discussing 30 plane loads of tennis players coming over from all over the world. Nothing against the tennis players. How we can take the risk of what's going on when you tell a story like that is
that's
just
right, because you
amazing.
Check into restaurants now with your little QR code, right? You check in, and then if someone who went to that restaurant the day before, that day, the day after, a week after, then you're told to isolate now for 14 days. Don't go out, don't put anyone in danger because you were in the vicinity of this. But at the time, none of that was said to me. I got the receptionist telling me, "Okay, you're fine," which is, you don't need to speak to the doctor, you're fine, which is terrifying. The doctor, when I did speak to him, said, "Don't come here. There are no tests at the moment, don't come here." So I was on my own, and for me, the option was, okay, I could dial 000 and go to hospital, but I grew up with a mother in microbiology in the UK, and I know very well about viral overload. So from the description I'd given them on the COVID hotline, she said, "You've got what sounds like the L strain," which is the worst one. It's the long strain, because I'd had it for 6 weeks. And there are other strains. There's the S strain, the R strain. Now, if you get viral overload, if you go into hospital and you're on a vent and you're exposed to other COVID patients who have a different strain, there is a potential. I'm sure the risk is low, but there is a potential of viral overload. And so I thought, if this is it for me, I'm going here with my kids. That's how I'm going.
So rather than taking remedial action to or for whoever you were speaking to, they just said, "You better be prepared to say goodbye to your loved ones."
A meaningful goodbye.
That is
yeah.
just.
So what would spring
into some sort of panic action and do something, wouldn't you?
Mm. What transpired? I'm more interested in how did you cure yourself? Did you just let it run its course? Did you get medication?
I let it run its course. The inhaler that my friend sent me through the mail arrived, and I absolutely sincerely believe that saved me. I started taking all the supplements that were recommended, which was zinc and all that stuff, and I think I was squeezing like 10 to 15 oranges a day. And I tried to relax. Obviously, I went to bed for weeks and weeks, and I tried to relax and not panic. But for me, the panic of the not being able to breathe side of it was terrifying. I could feel my sort of fingers crackling and my arms crackling and going into a panic attack. And I'm just not someone who's like that. Like, I don't even take tablets when I have a headache. You have to drag me to the GP. I've had 3 children, natural childbirths. And the day I gave birth, I checked myself out of hospital and signed a release and went home. I don't like hospitals. I don't like doctors. So it was bizarre that I was ringing around trying to get help, and that's how I know that I was pretty scared.
So is there some pleasant anonymity in the fact that you are also known as Sarah Beaumont? Can you...
No.
No, you don't...
No.
Many people would... recognize you as that person.
They do, yeah.
Particularly, does that annoy you? It'd be pretty standard, wouldn't it?
It's a bit of a blocker on life sometimes. You know, it gets hot in Australia, and I have my hair down today. But when it's hot, girls with long hair tend to wear a ponytail. If I put my hair in a ponytail, I can't go anywhere because I look like Sarah Beaumont. And the worst, they think I am Sarah Beaumont, so they think I'm going to steal their husbands. That's number yes. one. I actually see women grab their boyfriends tight. It's like, for God's sake.
Okay, so yeah, that's why I asked you. So it's a typecast thing. It is a not a noose range, and it's got you where you are. Probably not.
Yeah, I love her.
It hasn't got you where. Yeah, there's a lot more strings to your bow than that.
Yeah,
It's a love-hate thing.
It's like life.
To be there, and it's a.
It's like life. There are positives and there are negatives, but I talk about this also in my autobiography that it's very different becoming a celebrity on television in the UK and Australia compared to the US, and that's one thing that the US do really well because they have the Screen Actors Guild.
Yep.
That actors at least earn enough money. I have a friend in LA. She did one series of Star Trek Enterprise. And she owns a house with an 8-foot wall around it because they pay large sums because they know you're going to be physically and bodily recognizable in the street, and they want you to be able to leave that production and be able to protect yourself. It's not like that when you work in Australia and the UK. You know, you can pay your bills and start paying off a house, but then when the show's pulled away from you, in my case, I did resign. I wasn't fired. I left. Because I did a movie and thought I was going to go off and have this movie career, which just didn't happen. But when the financial rug gets pulled out from under you and you're used to earning, I'm sure AFL guys know at a certain level.
Mm.
You know, I've met AFL guys when I do sales jobs as well, and I went from that to selling cars and doing all the other jobs that I've done.
So I don't know him well, but I know Alan Fletcher.
Yeah.
And I know Jenna Hansen, his
yeah.
wife. So I know them pretty well, but not great friends.
Yeah.
Has Dr. Carl, who the person you were meant to be flirting with on Neighbours, do you ever speak to him? Has he had similar recognition problems about why would he be on with you and on the show? Or
you know, Alan handles global fame better than anyone I've ever met. He loves it. He exists well within it. And... he's sort of a different animal to me. You see, there's sort of two kind of actors and celebrities, and this is one of the reasons I've walked away from acting is I find it very difficult to play the game, and the game primarily being that when you're an actor, you can't be anything else. You can't have an opinion. You can't be an actual real person in the real world because their belief is that if you do that, then people won't be able to see you as a character anymore. So I guess if I'm becoming known as a Trump supporter or someone who is, let's say, non-Democrat out there in the social media universe, then I can't probably be seen as the wife of a tugboat captain, maybe in a show set in the harbour in Sydney. You know what I mean? Because
yeah, I
people
do.
Are going to look at me and go, oh, but she's that lady who talks about Trump on social media. So, you know, I can understand why they feel that way. But for me, it was like being in a cage and I don't want to be caged.
So just did you ever meet Jennifer Hansen? And there was no even contrived animosity there between the fact that even though it was on the show, she didn't get jumpy about.
No, not at all. In fact, I actually shot a pilot. I know. Everyone wants to know this. It's crazy. I actually shot a pilot in.
No, because people convince you, not her, not those people.
No, but
I've mentioned.
She's his wife. She knows. She knows he's not running off with.
No, I didn't.
I can't believe.
I didn't mean it like that. I meant she would probably, because people believe in the characters on Neighbours, she would probably be getting spoken to and harassed, and why do you, she would probably be
I don't think so. It was me
spoken
that was
to
harassed.
By the public about it.
I had my foot spat on outside Harrods once, and a lady said to me, get away
so
from
So the
him.
Show is shown in England, Neighbours is in
twice
England.
Twice a day, the same episode twice a day. Yeah. And they really believe it. And you think, that was my, that for me, that was the biggest compliment as an actor, and still to this day, is everyone thinks I'm Sarah Beaumont. And so I pat myself on the back just a little bit and go, well, you must have done a good job. Because that's all they see you as. So they believe
can I ask you, can I,
that, that was
can
my
I
point,
ask one question?
But that was my point about Jennifer Hansen, is that people would say, you want to keep away from that woman. She'd say, oh, it's a show, it's a television show. Yeah, that was my point.
Okay, now listen, I've been listening.
Yeah.
You said there's, you can't, something about the remuneration's not great.
Remuneration.
Sounds
like a big whinge, doesn't it? Here we go. Okay.
Now, okay, so you just told what I've picked up. Neighbours in Australia and England. Twice a day, you said, in England.
Yes.
Why isn't there a remuneration there? And what happened? Obviously, why weren't you paid well? And why did you leave? Were you seeking more money when you went wherever to do a film?
Okay, so when I joined the show, I was a really successful model from the UK. So I was used to, I'd do sort of a one-day shoot for a TV commercial for somebody like McDonald's or Coca-Cola, or, and I'd get 100,000 UK pounds. So already for me, when I joined the show, it was a massive pay drop because you're working full time. So there's very little time to do anything else. Although I did go on and do endorsements for other things in Australia at weekends when I was allowed to work. And I also did a little show at weekends for Foxtel called Animal Rescue for a couple of years. But so I was already willing to take the pay drop. For some people, it's a great pay. But for me, it was a pay drop because I wanted to build my acting career. I thought it was a great opportunity that Jan Ross had given me. And it was exciting. And listen, I'm not someone who's money driven anyway. I have a very small life. As long as I can go off, you know, a couple of times a month and look at antiques, I'm happy. That's my hobby. But the reason I left was I did my first film role in the movie Muggers, the Australian black comedy, which isn't widely known, but is actually quite a good movie. And I met an Irish actor during that movie, and we began a relationship, and he said, you know, he said, you shouldn't be on this little TV show. You're a film actress now. You need to come back to London, which is your home, and focus on film, which I did, which actually, looking back, was one of the biggest mistakes I've ever made.
Why?
Because I had already achieved success on a show with a character, and I would advise anyone else in that position, and there are many of them, to never do that. And I actually use it as an example with my children, because I feel you're sort of looking a gift horse in the mouth. You've been given a great opportunity, but you walk away from it to try and get a better one, and I shouldn't have done that.
So
that
you're talking about Neighbours. You had a role in Neighbours. You should never have walked away from that.
Absolutely.
But then you typecast. I listened to what you said before. You typecast. Didn't you have ambitions to do film work? Or
I did, but I couldn't, because I got close to a really big film. I went for a film in London called Along Came Polly, and it was down to me and Jennifer Aniston. And I thought, oh, there you go. I beat her in the sexiest woman in the world poll. But I remember the casting director in London, I think it was Universal, and she said to me, well, they're in a room now, and they're deciding whether they're going to go with the girl from Friends or the girl from Neighbours.
So, Nicola.
They went with Friends.
So, Nicola, you just said, you not just said, but earlier you said you're living with someone, in a man, I presume, in the Dandenongs.
Rangers, yeah.
It said that you were going out with a Greek golfer whose name was Nick, and we wouldn't know his surname. Mm-hmm. How many times have you been married? Three. Twice.
Thanks, Sam.
No, I've had four goes at it.
Okay, it's three times, but the first one I was drunk and it was a joke in London and we had it annulled, but twice properly. Yeah.
Right, no, that's...
I won't be marrying again.
No, I said that too. Got married a fortnight ago. so then we wanted to get on to, first of all, ClickMonkey, but we want to get on to Witches of Toorak, because there's some extraordinary statements you've made about that book. And fantastic. And I was just wondering if you were worried about the retribution or the cancel culture of whatever you're going to do in the future. The Click Monkey was about, who, I think it says about your kids, who do you trust with your kids?
Yeah.
Because it said that you've had some sexual abuse problems in with your kids or you
me,
in the past.
Me, yeah, no, I've shielded my kids successfully, which I'm very proud of having, you know, experienced what I have. Yeah, obviously I'm British, I grew up in the UK, and the book is fiction, but obviously you can't write that kind of fiction unless you've experienced it. And I was assaulted twice as a child. The first one when I was 5. And it was by a next door neighbour whose daughter I used to play with and go round. And sort of my childhood ended when I was 5 because I trusted this man.
And did that man pay for what he did?
God, no. He told me if I ever told anybody, he'd kill my dad. So I didn't tell a soul because I love my dad.
And you didn't tell a soul for how long?
Until I wrote the book.
That's extraordinary.
Yeah.
And, yeah, no, you couldn't write a book that unless you were had experienced some part of that.
Yeah.
And then, so the Witches of Eastwick.
Turak.
Turak.
Freudian slip.
Oh, but you're right.
Freudian slip. The Witches of Turak. There are some extraordinary quotes in here about, did you get a bit of blowback for that?
Every bit of feedback I've had about the Witches of Turak has been positive. And it's been positive from people who have knowledge and experience of women like this, not just in Turak, but obviously in Turak, but all over Melbourne, all over Australia, all over the world. But I would say in my experience of over 20 years coming from the UK to Melbourne, that there is something in the psyche of a lot of females in this country that see marriage as a small business. And they go into it and they convince these men. And I am very concerned about it. I have a son. And, you know, I would like to leave my children everything I ever managed to make. And I find these women unscrupulous, these gold diggers. They're looking for a free ride. They're looking to not work for the rest of their lives. And they're absolutely, they'll stop at nothing to get what they want.
So how much can I ask? Because I started, I got the book.
Yeah.
I read the first couple of, and then I went to the back.
Yeah.
And I was shocked.
You should
never
do that. That's very naughty.
Yeah, but hang on. I got the book yesterday, and I've got to try and read the thing. I thought, oh, I'll see what the front's like, see what the back's like.
Okay.
So you finish up with a girl from the western suburbs who crosses the
Start with a girl from the western suburbs,
and you finish with a woman getting raped or something at the end. Is that right? Am I right? No.
I'm not going to give anything away in my book.
Okay. So
she did come. The main character did come from the western suburbs. Yes.
Yeah.
Lots of them do.
Just on the.
Are you from the western suburbs? Do you take offence at that?
No. I'm just. I wonder how much work you've done in there. How fictitious the book is.
Oh, gee, that would be telling.
Because you've got a surfer. You've got a surfer. The opening thing is a surfer, and he locks his kids in the car, 4 kids in the car, while he goes surfing. The mother is
You mean, do I have actual factual knowledge of that?
Well, you've got to get something. You've got to get something to come up with these ideas.
Yes, you do.
You've got a vivid imagination.
Well, there's a saying, isn't there, in writing, write what you know.
So Nicola, you said women look at this as a business,
yeah,
and which is probably the pretext of the book. Men are from Mars and women are from Venus, because I've said this for decades, that men are liars and women are schemers. Men will be guided by
men can be liars. Sam, I'm impressed that you've really admitted that.
Yes, because men are guided by
yes, I know what they're guided by.
Yes,
Sam.
That's right. And then some men give it a name because they don't want to have their decisions being made by strangers. And women are happy to cop it all as long as they get something out of it.
I think so. It does seem like a bit of a negotiation, doesn't it? But yeah, I guess from my side, I've definitely had experience more from the female side of it. I do know a couple of instances of particularly older guys who have a lot of money who were kind of played by younger women. And these younger women have it seems from the outside, managed to convince these guys that they're, you know, they've genuinely fallen crazy in love with them. And, you know, my heart gets concerned for these men on that level. And it's just extraordinary to me some of the things that would come out of the mouths of the women that I met in society in Melbourne, particularly when I was in the 90s, when the late 90s in my heyday. Obviously, I was going to all the award shows, TV awards. I presented at the AFIs, the Film Awards, Music Awards, the opening of Crown Casino, every single huge event I was present at. And the room was either full of celebrities or money. And the females that I met that were married to the money, because it usually was that way around, it's not always. I will admit there are young, handsome guys that go after rich women as well. But the women that I met who had married the money were a different breed. Yeah, a different breed.
Do you fraternize cohabit in any way with people from neighbours, or is that just
in real life?
A big family, yes, or not?
Or have you disassociated yourself
from it?
No. Well, I think they've probably disassociated from me because, you know, it's...
The people on Neighbours?
Well, it's a family show, isn't it? And a lot of the things I say are not really family show appropriate because I'm not on there anymore. I guess if I was contracted to a network or something, I'd probably...
But This is the contradiction. So a lot of people would disassociate speaking to me because they know I'm a Trump fan, and they would to just admit that you're a Trump fan, which I am, and I have no idea why people are so virulent about him. Honestly, and Rod's sitting here and he doesn't like him.
But Sam, it's the hypocrisy because they say that the word is Democrat. So when people say to me, I can feel it when they come at me and they say, are you telling me that you support Donald Trump? And before I answer the question, I say to them, before I answer, I'm going to ask you a question. Am I allowed to support Donald Trump? Am I allowed my own democratic opinion? And they're sort of, because you've asked the question, but you already know the answer. The answer is, I'm not allowed to support Donald Trump. Even though I've got a list of as long as my arm of the incredible achievements that he did as president, because he's not one of the swamp. He's not one of them. That's why they hate him. Because he will likely, when he leaves now, he will likely scorch the earth there with what he knows. He's not going away quietly. He's a blabbermouth. He is essentially a whistleblower. And he's going to scorch that earth in Washington. And when he goes, we're going to know about all of it. What he knows about who, when, and where. And that's what they're frightened of. That's why with literally 4 days to go, they're trying to impeach the man. Firstly, so he can't run again in 2024. And secondly, to invalidate his legacy as president, which has been great. Yep. Which they found totally annoying. But they need to do that so that anything he says is invalidated. And it's really like that for us. We'll be invalidated if we have an opinion as well.
So being invalidated, are you going to find it difficult now if you are after some meaningful vocation going forward?
Yes, radio.
So do you think the sponsors that will ramp up against anything that you do? They've done it to me.
Yeah.
That has happened. That's a fact.
Mm.
I got cancelled because of my opinion about George Floyd and a few other things, which had nothing to do with the race, just had to do with the person.
Yeah.
And Trump, of course. This is going to be a sticking point to your career from here on, if you wish to have a career from here on.
I think I'm a really well-balanced person. I think my mission would be to speak only to the facts and to be measured. I'm not interested in going out there and being controversial. I didn't actually think I was being controversial.
Just
having an opinion. And now it's sort of gone down the track of we're going to be punished. I mean, it's actually been said out loud in the Capitol that anyone that retroactively supported him might get cancelled. I mean, one of the comments this morning was that you'll be lucky if you can still use email at the end of this.
That is... To think
Imagine this in Australia, Sam. Imagine if one party came in, and when they came in, they said in Australia that everything that is said by the other side cannot be seen, cannot be heard, cannot be validated. Not only that, you're not allowed to say it, you're not allowed to think it, because if you do, you're losing social media, you're losing your businesses, and you're losing your ability to email. What do? Go out and buy carrier pigeons so we can speak to each other.
Well so the other...
That's not democracy, is it, Sam?
Well, of course it's not, Nicola, but the other chat platform in the States, Parler, has now, because they say they're politically non-aligned, they just allow free speech, and because all the Trump supporters, well, most of them have been kicked off Twitter for having opinions, they've now drifted over to Parler, and because it turns out to be most of the conservatives are on Parler, they've had that platform removed by the carrier.
Yeah, but it's getting ridiculous now, isn't it? As I said on Twitter, someone needs to steady America and fast. And of course, as expected, there's no leadership coming from the Biden-Harris campaign. And someone needs to steady it, because this swings both ways. And the one thing you've got to know about a lot of Trump supporters is they are business people and they're capitalists. And already we've seen in Idaho that the massive tech company that runs the platform for Facebook and Twitter have taken them down. So in Idaho, you can no longer get Facebook and Twitter because he was a Trump supporter and they've kicked him off Twitter. So this will just keep going. And what America has become now is this hate-filled nest that is as far from democracy as it's possible to get. I think it's very unfair that they're saying, unless you fall in line with their views, we're going to cancel you, we're going to remove you. And what if you do? What if you're successful? What are you going to do? I'll tell you what's going to happen. It's happened before. The Democrats will eventually cannibalize themselves. It's going to fall apart. There's a lack of leadership. God knows what's going to happen with the very credible threat that's coming, because Joe Biden is compromised with regard to China. Yep. You know, I saw today Australia is standing firm, and Josh Frydenberg is attempting to block the purchase of a major building company in Sydney by the Chinese Communist Party. And so it seems Australia have the sense to notice when there's a danger there, and the incoming administration in America don't. And so I'm proud of Australia for doing that.
So if there was compulsory voting in America, would all these problems be solved?
Compulsory voting, no. Voter ID, yes. But what they're about to do...
Compulsory voting, everybody's got to vote. At the moment, you don't have to vote.
Yeah.
And you don't have to qualify that you're actually
but
a person.
But it won't matter.
You
don't have to qualify that you're a legal voter. Anyone can vote. That was the rort of the postal. That was the mail-in voting. That was the rort. That's how they
got
him over
the line.
But you know what? When I started in business 20, 30 years ago, you know, you would go in with your accountant, or you'd sit down with companies you were working with, and they'd always say the same thing: the numbers don't lie. Okay, the numbers don't lie. Well, guess what? In 2021, the numbers do lie. And I've got evidence that I'm trying to share online. They're probably letting 5 or 6 people see it. But every day, every hour, every minute, it's saying that my post that you saw, Sam, about Trump, basically just saying goodbye to an outgoing president. I didn't say anything controversial in that post. Nothing. Is constantly getting likes, 34 more likes, 85 more likes. For every chunk of likes my post is getting on Twitter, they're removing numbers. So it's gone from nearly 9,000 likes to just over 6,000 likes. Every time I get a chunk that they've liked it, they take them off. So we can no longer believe, can we, as they used to say in business, the numbers don't lie, because guess what? Now they do.
They're corrupt, and it's a fraud, Donald, and whether you're... You've been very
quiet, Rocket.
You've
been very quiet, Rod.
You should, more than anyone, be absolutely disgusted at what's going on. Not about Trump.
I think secretly he is, Sam. I can see on his face. I think he thinks there's a lot of sense in it.
I'm going to put words in his mouth. He said to me, he said, I'm not a Trump fan, he said, but I tell you what, the hypocrisy about the riots and what they've accused Trump of just in the last week.
Well, Kamala said they should not stop. They're going to carry on, and they should carry on, and they should not stop. And now they're trying to take
who,
that clip
Pamela?
Down. Kamala Harris.
Mm. Oh, who shouldn't stop?
The rioters.
Oh, can they I shouldn't? Speak for myself for
yes.
a sec? There's also another dynamic here at play, which is that these monopolies of Google, Facebook, whatnot are all under review at the moment, and they're now pandering to, they know which side their bread's buttered on. So
yes.
they're pandering. So Biden's now won the election, so they're not going to do anything to upset him, because the last thing they want is their monopoly being broken up, which is what they're currently
Democratic said.
I know, but don't, I don't know that it's necessarily because they support Biden.
Of course they
I
do.
Think it's because they now need to support Biden.
No, but difference. See, when they did nonsense. Have a different president from the other side, for that argument to work, you would have thought, well, they won't upset him or his supporters because he is actually in power at the moment, but they didn't. They
and
continue to do it.
75 million people actually support him.
Yes. We want to go near the notion that he might have been inciting some sort of...
What he said, he loved his supporters.
Trump.
Yeah, you're meant to condemn people when things start getting violent and they break into places.
For 2 years,
he said, "Listen, guys, go home. Rod, I love you and I thank you."
He did say, "Go home. Don't start this nonsense, mate." They Antifa, Black Lives Matter, and the Biden administration or the Biden supporters have put up with looting. Burning the country to the ground, burning police stations down.
Is it okay
that they called us deplorables? Is it okay that I've been called a racist 1,400 times on Twitter this week when I didn't say anything racial?
That's a completely separate
issue. Why? Because it's coming from Democrats.
I'm talking about the fact that Twitter should have, I don't think they should have banned him.
Okay.
I think they should have suspended him at that time when there may well have been a...
What, for having an opinion?
There may have been a threat to people, you know, okay. Security.
So how come they didn't suspend for a time?
No, that's Kamala. Right. I agree with that. Yeah. I think... Kamala Harris didn't endorse or incite looting. We've got no problem with a protest. We've got no problem with a peaceful protest.
I know you don't pay attention.
We have an issue.
We are
comparing looting with storming the Capitol.
Okay, let me just say one thing.
Everyone's free to protest.
Okay, so they've taken Parler down.
I'm glad I spoke up.
Let's assume what they're saying is right. I know it's wrong because I'm on Parler or was on Parler, right? Let's assume that what they're saying and claiming is true, that we organise and get together as conservatives on Parler. do you know that all of the Black Lives Matter and Antifa marches, gatherings, riots, everything was organised on Twitter and Facebook? How come Twitter and Facebook are not being held to the same standard as Parler? Please
don't
explain.
Have an answer.
In the words of Pauline Hanson,
explain. No. Because nobody has a problem with the protest.
Yes.
But the problem is once they stormed the Capitol and four people were killed, this guy didn't come out and condemn it. He came out and said, instead he started calling them patriots, which we all know what that means.
That is an absolute
distortion. He started to refer to them as patriots. He said, we will not give up, we will never concede. And then when he was told to finally say, hey, you got to tell them to go home, he sort of went, oh, okay, go home, but I love you and I thank you.
You are being fed bullshit.
I'm not going on what I saw.
He said, I don't condone violence, please go peacefully.
And I love you and thank you.
Seriously, it's where you get your news,
you can't
mate.
Love and thank your supporters.
You can't when they've just been guilty of that. You have to condone
the act. He's speaking to the 100,000 people that peacefully protested about being removed from office. He said,
No Democrat, I'll tell you the difference, right? No Democrat ever said to the rioters, not the peaceful protesters, to the rioters.
To the looters?
Yeah,
never.
No one ever said, could you please be peaceful and go home? Not once. Not even once. When people were dying. David Dorn was an African American retired police officer who was shot dead by a peaceful protester. And no one said, oh my God, somebody died. Please go home?
No, that was horrible.
Not one Democrat said it, Rod.
See, at least I concede something. You guys never concede anything.
I conceded. I'm peaceful.
Old mate, he doesn't.
He may not.
Because you don't pay enough attention to what's going on to mount an argument with me because you have no argument. You're just speaking nonsense, mate.
Thanks for your help, Don.
I'm sitting here just fascinated. You know what, Sam? Let's talk like a Democrat. He is speaking his truth. He's standing in his truth.
All right. Are we done?
Why did you not... continue with the radio? Did you get
cancelled? Well, you already mentioned it, didn't you? So we were an advertiser sponsor driven radio show, and it wasn't anything to do with me. It wasn't Nicholas Big Mouth that shut down the show, although I did start to get sick, and so people were spraying me with Glen 20 in March, and like, I don't think you should come to work. But we didn't know anything about COVID then. Luckily I didn't pass it on to anyone. Everything was shutting down, and so, you know, we were at the time a Sunday morning radio show, and we were actually, God, it was devastating. We were in talks to take the show Monday to Friday, and You know, I had streaming companies talk to me about hosting my own television show, Charles in Charge. That's kind of the tag that I use. And it all just ground to a halt, didn't it? So I am very hopeful that because I'm a measured person and I'm fair and I like to hear both sides, that I will at some point end up on talk
Charles
radio.
Charles in Charge. I like that. That's you might produce Charles in
you
Charge.
You produce me, Rod. I think Rod likes me. I think Rod secretly likes a Trump supporter.
Do you know about the rocket? Can I embarrass him? No, shut up.
We're done.
Don't you turn me off, I'll knock you out. the Rocket, he set up, started Fox Sports.
He started that.
He's a very good producer and organiser.
He's
and
turned
neighbor,
some off now.
And he's a star. And he does right, this just for no...
Well, he got me in today and I didn't know him from a bar of soap and the
Sam.
Text messages
I, no,
came.
I think Sam thought you'd say no to him. That's why I...
Did you say...
Sam normally does the guests.
Nicola... thank you very much for coming
You're
in.
You're welcome.
You
it's nice to meet you.
A star only because you're multifaceted and talented. And Don, we could play football and that's about all we could do. This is a star and an international star. And we appreciate you coming in and putting up with this.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
It's
thank
been
you.
A pleasure.
Thank you.
Around the streets late at night, I'm worried because you ain't treating me right. Come back again, I'm just crazy about you, baby.